E4E is brought to you by the University of Delaware Partnership for Public Education. In an effort to increase the availability and accessibility of UD expertise to Delaware's P12 educators, leaders, and policy influencers, we have invited faculty members from the University of Delaware's 9 colleges to share their research. We hope you enjoy today's critical conversation and consider ways you might be able to leverage relevant research and UD expertise to advance policy and transform practice. Hello, my name is Dr. Anastasia Pernton. I'm the Associate Director of the Partnership for Public Education. I'll be the host for today's episode of the E4E podcast, which was produced by Sarah Daniels, a graduate student in the Biden School of Public Policy and Administration. Today, we are joined by Dr. Christina Budde, an associate professor specializing in language and literacy education in the School of Education at the University of Delaware. Christina is a former elementary school teacher. Her research seeks to understand the classroom practices and contexts that build upon the cultural and linguistic diversity of students, as well as promote social-emotional well-being. Specifically, her research looks at language and literacy development and instruction of early childhood and elementary age children from diverse backgrounds. Christina also teaches courses related to literacy instruction and teaching bilingual learners. Thank you so much for joining us today, Christina.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. So before we dive into these questions, I would just really appreciate if you could define the term multilingual learner for our listeners.
Sure. So multilingual learners, or MLs, are children acquiring English as an additional language. In the past, these students have often been referred to as English learners, or ELs. So this term can inadvertently focus solely on what they've yet to achieve, proficiency in English. So like many others, I advocate for the term multilingual learners because it highlights the remarkable skills these students possess in navigating multiple languages and cultures daily.
Awesome. Thank you. Christina, what is the significance of developing oral language? Why is oral language development particularly important for multilingual learners?
So oral language serves as the cornerstone for both reading and writing proficiency. It consists of listening and speaking, and it encompasses various components, things like vocabulary, syntax, which is sentence structure, and pragmatics, which are those socially acceptable communication norms, like how to enter or exit a conversation with your teacher versus your peers. Research indicates that robust oral language skills, whether in multilingual learners or monolinguals, correlate with improved reading comprehension and writing abilities. So while many monolingual English speakers have been exposed to English since infancy through regular listening and speaking opportunities, most multilingual learners have not had the same level of exposure. So educators want to promote oral language in the classroom. Now, for multilingual learners who are embarking on their English language journey, mastering social language is essential for everyday interactions, things like seeking assistance or engaging in play with their friends. However, all multilingual learners, regardless of their English language development, this could be in the early stages, intermediate, or advanced stages, they require exposure to and engagement with academic language to be able to thrive in school settings. Now, academic oral language is distinct from that casual social conversation. It's vital for successful participation in academic tasks like summarizing text, retelling a narrative, or using evidence to support your claim. Tasks that aren't typically happening on the playground or when hanging out with friends. So while social language tends to develop both in and out of the classroom, educators have to create multiple opportunities for students to immerse themselves in academic language. And by prioritizing the development of academic oral language skills, educators can better equip their multilingual learners to meet grade level expectations.
In what ways do small group reading discussions support literacy and oral language development for multilingual learners in particular?
So small group reading discussions offer educators valuable opportunities to address specific aspects of academic oral language. So for instance, a teacher might form a group focusing on students who need additional support in grasping the academic language necessary, for example, using evidence to support their reasoning when responding to questions. So that's a standard we see across many grade levels in the Common Core. When working with a small group, teachers can tailor their instruction to meet the precise needs of the students. So this could be building vocabulary, not only from the text they are reading, but also the vocabulary or the language that students will need to participate in an academic task, like using evidence from the text to support their answer. So this might include using introductory or transitional phrases to signal to their audience that they're adding evidence to support their answer, like using "for example" or "because" the text says. So in these small group settings, educators can provide targeted support through modeling and guided practice. And perhaps most importantly, for facilitating oral language development, they can create discussion or promote discussion among students by adapting scaffolding techniques or the level of support that a teacher would provide a student based on the individual student's proficiency levels in English language development. So this flexibility within a small group helps the teacher adjust the level of support that they provide, and they can ensure that each student receives the appropriate amount of assistance to enhance their academic oral language.
So now, what do those techniques look like? How can teachers use the techniques, and what are those techniques specifically that they can use to foster a conversation during group text-based discussion?
That's a great question. So there are many different techniques. I'm going to share three with our listeners today. So first, it's really crucial for teachers to establish a safe and inclusive environment for multilingual learners to feel comfortable in participating and taking risks using this new language. So by setting clear norms or expectations before a discussion can really help students understand what's expected of them and also can help foster that pragmatic development. For example, teachers might share that they expect respectful communications. So all students might agree to listen actively and respect each other's ideas, opinions, and contributions, regardless of their language proficiency or their background. Second, allowing students ample time to interact with each other during text discussion is essential. So this includes opportunities for both listening to proficient English models and actively speaking. So by hearing their peers articulate ideas and concepts, students can internalize language patterns and vocabulary more effectively, which allows them to improve their own language proficiency over time. Additionally, small group discussions offer a real unique advantage over those large group discussions or in large whole class settings. So in small groups, each student has more opportunities to actively participate and contribute to the conversation. So this increased participation are particularly beneficial for multilingual learners as it allows them to practice and refine their language skills in a supportive environment. Small group discussions also promote collaboration and peer learning, because students have the chance to exchange ideas, ask questions, and provide feedback to one another. So overall, providing this ample time for student interaction, especially in small group settings, not only enhances language development, but also can foster this sense of community and engagement within the classroom. And the third technique I would say is providing appropriate scaffolding is really essential for ensuring that students can actually actively participate in the discussion. So this scaffolding involves various strategies that's going to be aimed at supporting students' comprehension and their participation level. So for example, teachers should engage in plenty of modeling and thinking aloud. They're going to illustrate the cognitive processes that are involved in effective reading and writing. And by demonstrating how a skilled reader or a skilled writer approaches a text or formulates a response, teachers provide students with valuable insight into successful participation. So teachers should also explicitly teach students how to participate successfully in the discussion. This can be achieved through scaffolding techniques, such as offering examples of valid evidence from texts, teaching effective ways to respond to your peer, and by providing clear guidelines and examples. Teachers are able to really empower their students to contribute meaningfully to their discussion while they're developing their analytical and communication skills. And another scaffolding technique for teachers to use is to write down and record student ideas during discussion. So whether it's on a shared whiteboard or a chart paper, this not only helps organize thoughts and facilitate the flow of conversation, but it also validates students' contributions. So seeing their ideas visually represented fosters the sense of ownership and really encourages students to expand on their reasoning. Additionally, the visualization or the progression of the discussion enables students to track the development of ideas and understand the connection between the different points in the conversation. So by implementing these strategies, educators can create a supportive and inclusive environment where all students feel this sense of empowerment to contribute and grow.
Could you talk a little bit more about how teacher talk moves facilitate or constrain student reasoning?
So research has found that discourse or conversation between teachers and students can work as a powerful tool to improve academic performance. Researchers have explored specifically what things do teachers say or do that promote student talk to facilitate discussion. Or alternatively, what do teachers say or do that constrain student talk and can really hinder discussion? So in our study, we looked specifically at reasoning discourse, sometimes known as argumentation discourse, and we looked at fourth graders who are participating in a small group discussion. Now, reasoning discourse is when students have to propose a claim, support their claim with evidence, and pose questions considering alternative perspectives. We found that teacher talk moves can significantly impact student reasoning during discussion, either by facilitating or constraining their ability to engage in this discourse. And we found that students were more likely to support their claims with evidence and build upon or question their peers' ideas when teachers did certain things or participated in specific talk moves. So a few of those facilitating type talk moves that we found was first asking for evidence and explanation. So when teachers prompted students to provide evidence or explain their reasoning behind their claims, it encouraged them to support their opinions with concrete evidence, foster deeper understanding and critical thinking. A second talk move was rephrasing and recording student responses. So by rephrasing and recording students' responses visibly, teachers validated the students' contributions and provided a reference that students could return to later in the discussion to add to others' ideas. And this practice reinforced the importance of students' ideas and encouraged them to build upon one another's thoughts, which is really important in this argumentation discourse. And third, providing resources or tools. So when teachers offered resources such as vocabulary cards that had been previously introduced or copies of the text that students were referencing, it prompted students to use evidence more often to support their claims. And by referencing these resources throughout the discussion, teachers were able to scaffold their students' ability to return to the evidence and engage in reasoning discourse while really deepening their understanding of the topic. So although our findings demonstrated that students had many opportunities to practice and use reasoning discourse, we also found that teachers used moves that constrained student talk, meaning their discussion was cut short, or students' thoughts would be left undeveloped or unsupported. So a few of those constraining moves that we found teachers using were teachers dominating talk time. So when teachers dominated talk time, it really hindered students' participation and it limited their opportunities for peer interaction and that reasoning discourse to take place. So students became passive listeners rather than active contributors in the discussion. Second, when teachers accept truncated student answers, they really constrain talk as well. So accepting short or incomplete student answers where it was just yes or no, or I think this, without that because or that reasoning or explanation, it may signal to students that depth of thought is not necessary. So this can lead to a very surface level understanding and inhibit the development of those critical thinking skills that we want to develop. And finally, it's time constraints. You know, in the face of time constraints, teachers may have felt pressured to move discussions along quickly, so resulting in the interruption or the truncation of students' thinking processes. So balancing the need to cover content while allowing sufficient time for student exploration and reflection is really essential for fostering that meaningful learning experience that we want to see.
What did the findings of your study reveal about the relationship between teacher talk moves and subsequent student communication moves in small group reading discussions with multilingual learners?
The findings of our study underscored the critical role of teacher talk moves in shaping subsequent student communication moves during those small group discussion. So while the aim was to facilitate student-driven discussion, our research revealed that teachers often dominated or interrupted conversations with procedural talk. So they were giving lots of directions. And that really constrained student participation. We found that it's essential for teachers to strike that delicate balance between providing scaffolding or supporting students and then avoiding over-scaffolding. which can really hinder student engagement and position them as passive learners. So over-scaffolding is just giving too much support to students and doing too much of the talking. So despite the intention to foster student-led discussion, teachers' tendency to limit student speech turns and prioritize those procedural aspects over meaningful reasoning constrain the depth and quality of their students' contributions to the discussion. Moreover, time constraints emerged as a significant factor influencing teacher communication moves. So we know that the reality of classrooms is that teachers face pressures to manage their instructional time. And this limitation highlights the need for innovative practices to address these time constraints, such as incorporating extended talk or reasoning, perhaps through written or audio recorded response journals where students can participate in other ways. Our study suggests that teachers can optimize their talk turns or their talk moves by strategically preparing students for these text-based collaborative small group discussions by intentionally asking questions that prompt students to provide reasoning or evidence and to elaborate on their reasoning. And by doing so, teachers can empower students to take more of an active role in the discussion, thereby really reducing the need for extensive teacher intervention or procedural talk. So our findings underscore the importance of mindful teacher talk moves in fostering meaningful student engagement and reasoning discourse during small group discussion. And by adopting strategies that really prioritize student participation and thoughtful dialogue, teachers can create an inclusive and intellectually stimulating environment for their MLs or multilingual learners.
So if you could suggest one thing, what would you suggest teachers add or amplify in their current small group reading instructional practices based on these findings?
So I would suggest that teachers prioritize student-led discussions. And when they prioritize these discussions, they deepen student reasoning. So to achieve this, what I mean is that when we promote student-led discussions, we encourage students to take ownership of their learning by fostering an environment where they feel empowered to engage in these discussions. So we want to provide opportunities for students to pose questions, support their claims with evidence, consider alternative perspectives, and shift the focus from the teacher-directed to student-led discussions. And doing so allows our students to engage and participate in critical thinking skills and deepening their understanding of the text. And in order to facilitate that deep reasoning or understanding, teachers need to encourage students to delve deeper by asking probing questions that promote them to justify their claims and provide evidence, or to encourage their students to challenge each other's ideas respectfully. So this might include providing prompts or sentence starters like, "I agree with so-and-so because," or "I see it differently because." That can really help facilitate more of this meaningful interaction between peers. And I would say striking a balance between providing support and allowing for students to participate in productive struggle. So while it's really important for teachers to scaffold student learning and to provide guidance as needed, it's also really critical to allow students the opportunity to grapple with challenging concepts. So when we empower our students to work through these complex ideas together, we encourage that peer-to-peer support that we can get during these types of discussions.
Before we move on, could you define what procedural talk looks like?
Sure. So procedural talk is when teachers are doing things like giving directions or reminding students to pay attention, to stay on task, to actively engage in the task at hand. So when teachers are giving these procedural type directions over and over again throughout the discussion, it really limits the amount of time that students can engage in the discussion because there's so much time spent on reminding of the rules or expectations. So by establishing that up front, we can really encourage students to get a strong understanding or grasp of the teacher's expectations And then we want to see them begin to employ or to use those expectations throughout the discussion. In the beginning, when teachers are just starting out with these small group discussions, they may need to spend more time on procedural talk, giving directions or redirecting students. But we want to see that amount of procedural talk gradually decrease the more often that they engage in these small group discussions.
So, Christina, we always like to close our episodes with a connection to Delaware. And I'm wondering, what do you think the implications of your findings, what is the connection to current Delaware initiatives?
So I think there's really two different connections that we can make here. The first one is thinking about MTSS. So when we think about MTSS and we think about tier one instruction, that's the instruction that we're providing to all of our students. The supports and the scaffolding that we provide our multilingual learners is part of tier one instruction. So we want to make sure that we're constantly providing access to the language or this academic oral language that's being used in the classroom. And we want to make that very clear and explicit to students. Now, the small group, it can come up in tier one instruction, or it might be tier two instruction. And that's because when we're targeting specific needs of students and we've tried things in tier one and we aren't successful, we may need to move students into that tier two group. And this type of small group discussion that we've talked about in this episode can really fit in tier two as well, targeting those specific individual needs of students. The second area that this ties in with Delaware policy is the new multilingual learner strategic plan. So in the plan, it calls for developing a shared awareness of the value of multilingualism. And within these small groups, we as educators can focus on valuing all the linguistic resources that students bring with them to the classroom. We can do this by building on what students already know and leverage their home language by providing space for students to talk and discuss. So this might even be allowing students to talk about the text in any language that they feel comfortable doing so. So that might be their home language, it might be in English, or it might be a combination of fluidity of both.
Christina, thank you so much for joining us today. Is there anything else you'd like to share before we close out this episode?
Thank you so much for having me today. I did want to acknowledge that I did this work through the enormous support of my co-authors of this study, Dr. Maggie Marcus, who's the executive director of the Sullivan Family Charitable Foundation, and Dr. Melinda Martin Beltran, who is a professor at the University of Maryland College Park. And I did also want to mention that this study is part of a larger study that was funded by IES under the co-principal investigators, Dr. Patrick Proctor of Boston College and Dr. Rebecca Silverman of Stanford University.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of E4E, brought to you by the University of Delaware Partnership for Public Education. For more information about the work being done by the Partnership for Public Education, please visit our website at www.udel.edu/ppe.